Hello everyone and welcome to this webinar. I'm Francis Seeley from GlobalNet 21. I'm from Mental Voices, and this is one of the many webinars that we do. Today I'm interviewing someone called Paul Everett, who many people will know because he was head of arts and culture in the London Borough of Enfield, but he was made redundant and now he's doing a number of other really exciting things. So we're going to talk to him about his journey through that redundancy and what he's doing now and what he hopes to do in the future, which I think will be really interesting. So Paul, thank you for joining us today. And can I ask you first, very briefly, because you could go on for a long time on this, could you tell us a little bit about your background, how you became so involved in the arts?
Oh my goodness, briefly, how I became involved in the arts. that is going to be hard for me to be brief, but it's I came into the arts with because of huge amounts of luck, I suppose. I come from a very poor working class background, and my parents didn't have the money for the arts at all, but working class families quite often had pianos in their houses, and my grandmother played the piano. She died, but my grandfather still had a old piano, terrible out of tune thing, in her house. And apparently when I was 3-4 years old, I used to go and bang on it the whole time. I just wanted to play music. And out of frustration, my mother actually persuaded a friend of hers who could play the piano to start giving me piano lessons. And that opened up the worlds of the arts to me. I would never, ever have got into it if there wasn't that luck of my dead grandmother having left her piano.
So that's how you started. And by the way, I remember the piano in my house as well. So I had the same journey as you. But I mean, you got interested in the arts, you banged away at the piano, you got involved, and eventually you became head of arts and culture in Enfield. So when did that happen? And what did you have in terms of hopes for that job?
I suppose I was very lucky in the 1990s. I got the opportunity to work at a theatre called the Theatre Hall Stratford East in Stratford East, London, which had been run by a really famous theatre director called Joan Littlewood. And it was very lucky. It had a really inspirational artistic director at that time called Philip Headley. And he was following on her tradition, and that was that the theatre should reflect the community in which it sits. So he was, and at that time, as it still is, Stratford had a growing Black and Asian community. And so he was really pioneering work for Black audiences and for Asian audiences. I remember growing up doing theatre and endlessly doing shows which were about middle class society, working class, very rarely reflected back. And so it really resonated with me, that work, and that was where that became my traineeship. With this extraordinary, inspiring man who was making things change for people. And the reason why I applied for the job in Enfield was because it was at Millfield Theatre, and Millfield Theatre was in Edmonton. And I could see this is exactly a very similar community to Stratford, very similar area to where I was born, what an opportunity that was.
But then you became largely responsible for the Dugdale Centre as well, which seemed a bit more formal in some ways. But were you trying to do the Joan Littlewood there and bring theatre to the community?
Yes. There was a huge amount of work to do Millfield to make sure you've got to start somewhere. And one of the things that I really understood, and which I was taught by Philip, actually, was that, you know, that you, that if the audiences are going to feel comfortable in the theatre, then the staff in the theatre must reflect the community. And so it was one of the first big jobs that I did, was to start creating a staff team that reflected that community. I mean, it was so exciting. My, you know, my front of house staff, one of them, you know, was born on the Klinger estate, to hop and a jump from the theatre, and one of, you know, many of them went to school over the road at Gladys Aylward School, and that becomes important. An audience understands that when you walk into a building and you feel welcome, because the staff there want you to come in and understand you, and you are from that community. And so that was the starting point.
Okay, so Patrick Samuel, who was an artist and musician, he says he owes everything to you, which is really, really a great compliment. So in that case, why do you think you were made redundant when you had so much community support?
That's why. That is exactly the reason why, is because my relationship was too close with the community. And there's now where a leadership, both officer and councillor level, that don't want to have those strong links with the community. They don't want the community to have that voice. We're hearing it over and over again, aren't we? We're hearing it from councillors who have left because they feel they can no longer reflect the concerns of their constituents anymore, because they're being shut out of information and meetings. So there's a terrible culture there at the moment, which, you know, wants to keep the community away and doesn't want those voices to be heard. We need to make sure that they are heard.
And I'm sure you did. But I mean, they were also planning to reconfigure the Dugdale into offices as well. Do you think that was also a problem that you had to face?
I think that is just a terrible piece of that's culture going into the wrong department. I mean, while I've been in culture in Enfield, while I was there, we moved departments so many times, and we moved into the building team. You know, it's a stupid place for culture to be. Yes, culture has buildings, but it's a completely different ethos. So, you know, looking at the value of space rather than the way it's used by the community. I'm just completely crazy.
So that team that you're talking about, I think it's called the Community Assets Team, and the Salisbury House in Bushill Park and Green Towers Community Centre.
No, it's in the building team. So as part of the restructure that's just happened, Salisbury House and Green Towers was moved in to a new community assets team, which is an amalgamation of three teams, actually. It was the team that was managing community halls, which was part of the housing department, the team that was managing the old schools halls, which are the youth centres, and then those two venues. Okay. The thinking behind it is that they're community venues and they can all be in one place. I mean, completely crazy, because they've all got different ethoses to them: cultural buildings, educational youth centres, and community halls, which are essential halls for the housing estate, so that they've got places where they can have their parties and wedding anniversaries right within the housing estate. They're crucial infrastructure for the community.
Okay, so you tried to keep close with the community. You objected to the way in which the council was treating the arts in terms of where it was placed within the council structure, because it didn't reflect what art and entertainment was about. And you alleged prior to your departure that there was a toxic culture of bullying and intimidation in the council. That's a really strong accusation. What did you mean by that?
I would point everybody in the whole country to listen to what Azeem Rafiq said yesterday. And he describes perfectly the culture of an organization that where people where you've got to put your head in the sand to survive what's going on, and the top of the organization it's just got an appalling culture in it. That is reflected not in so many organisations, and it results in all sorts of bullying and intimidation. And that is the environment. I don't want to point us out of being special in that. There's organisations all over the place which are supposed to be doing good, which end up not, because the wrong people have got to the top of the organisation.
Okay, the
empire all can't... over the place.
Yeah, I'm sure it is a lot of the place, but Empire Council responded by saying that your accusation is baseless and slanderous and a slur on Empire Council. How do you respond to that?
I'm not the only person who said it, am I? I mean, it, where you've got an organisation where a councillor has been bullied, has been proved to be bullied, and nothing is done about it.
Okay.
It's proven. It's not. I'm not saying anything that everybody doesn't know. It's out there in the public domain. Another councillor whose reputation has been destroyed for 2 years based on a lie and on a stupid Twitter post which was misinterpreted. Look at it. I mean, we can all see it. We've all been watching it happen. And I mean, the awful thing about this is that we have bodies which could do something about that, and the people responsible aren't doing anything about it, exactly as in the case of Azeem Rafiq was talking about yesterday.
That's a cricket example for those who don't know.
Yeah, but you've got, in the end, I hope that some people have got to speak out, haven't they? And that wonderful brave man did it yesterday. And I've done it in a little way. And because we need to stand up to make sure that other people feel that they can have their voice. And we need to make sure that we don't. I refuse to be bullied. People have tried to bully me all of my life, and I refuse to be bullied.
And you actually raised a grievance procedure, didn't you? I mean, what happened to that?
What do you mean?
I thought you raised a grievance procedure and the way you were treated. And
completely ignored. I brought up issues with HR. While we were doing the going through the again, reflecting on what Azeem Rafiq was saying yesterday, part of my team, my Black and Asian team, objected to the way that they hadn't been consulted and that the way they were treated with HR. And with the unions, and it was completely ignored, completely brushed aside, and they were allowed to be mistreated. It's just unbelievable. But actually, when listening to Azeem Rafiq yesterday, you go, yes, this just happens all over the place. And I'm hoping that team were listening yesterday to that wonderful man, and that they will stand up and say no. That we won't allow ourselves to be silenced by terrible bullies.
Okay, well, it's quite clear you will never be silenced, and many people look upon you as a sort of local champion of the arts. So, from that position, which is quite a position to be in, do you think there are now serious questions about Enfield's commitment to arts in the borough?
Oh. Without doubt, but these things go around and come around. So I have confidence that there are enough people in the community and the work that we've done over all these years to encourage the grassroots of community will make it thrive. I'm not worried for arts and culture in Enfield at all, not because of the people, you know, who were currently in charge of it, but because of the community. In the end, the community will want its stories to be told, and there are I'm in Chicken Shed Theatre at the moment for a meeting later on. I mean, there's wonderful institutions in Enfield doing wonderful things. So I have absolute faith in them.
But you talk about the community, and you came from the community, and now you've jumped back dead into the community, and you're going to be working with Love Your Doorstep.
I never left the community.
No, you never left the community, but you've really sort of cemented that relationship, and you're working with Love Your Doorstep. I mean, what do you think you can do there? What do you want to do there?
We're at beginning stages, but yeah, I've worked with Love Your Doorstep for over 10 years. You talked about the Dugdale Centre earlier. When we took over the Dugdale, because Dugdale Centre was a bit of a white elephant when we took it over, we made it into a real thriving community-based venue. And Love Your Doorstep were a massive part of helping us do that, because of they helped us reach a part of Enfield that had been difficult for us to get to come over to the east of the borough. So our mailing list, in a sense, was more east of the borough and less west. And so we had to do a lot of work to build those audiences for Dugdale Centre. And Love Your Doorstep was a wonderful platform for us to do that. And they were new at the time. So they helped us massively build our business. And I know that they have done that for so many businesses across Enfield. They've connected businesses with their customers, and customers with their local businesses, because that's, I love the ethos of where Love Your Doorstep came from. Emma and a group of friends after the riots could see they weren't very connected in to their community. And that's where it started. And Emma's drive over all these years has been to make those connections and make community work, and that ethos, I love it. And she's passionate about it.
She sure is. But is your plan to work with her to develop the arts further on a community basis?
Yes, it is. Amongst other things, arts will be one of those things, but community is centre of it. Is making sure that the community is connected to the infrastructure that it needs, and infrastructure is being developed for the way the community is developed. And, you know, our approach will be talking to the community, not talking at them.
That's good. And you've done that with the big Green Festival we've had as well, which was really, really fantastic. And you're now on the core group of the Enfield Climate Action Forum. Why did you decide to do that?
It's a crucial issue of our time. It's the crucial issue. I mean, I've been concerned about it for a while, and it's why that I created the Enfood brand when I was at the Dugdale Centre, because we really, you know, we really wanted to make, encourage, well, local people to eat healthily, but to start thinking about how they were sourcing their food, and to make sure that we were using local suppliers ourselves, and seasonal products. So, you know, we weren't, you know, offering strawberries in the winter when, you know, June is the time. trying to connect through food, people thinking about their environment and their responsibility, because we've become a greedy nation, haven't we, and a selfish nation. We want what we want now, and we've got to, and we can't, we're not going to be able to deal with this climate crisis with attitude. We've got to change it, and we've got to change it in ways which are meaningful for people. And culture plays a big part in that.
Well,
it's a big challenge for all of us.
Well, I was going to talk about that challenge because you coming in and helping with the NCAF Big Green Festival, Climate Festival, was really important because you did bring the arts into that, which is something we didn't have, you know, the depth to do, and you helped a great deal in that. How important do you think art is to get the message about climate change across to people?
It's one tool in the art connect art. In so many ways connects people's heart, really, and people's heart has got to be in it, and that takes time. It's why artists were used to create the Russian Revolution, and it's why they then killed all the artists after the revolution to make sure they didn't keep doing things. Art is really important at connecting people and getting people to dig a bit deeper.
Yeah, I mean, we're very lucky in Enfield, really, because we have a very vibrant civil society organisation. I mean, NCAP has 120 civil society organisations in its group. We've got powerful social networks like Levy Doorstep and others as well. In a way, if those are used correctly and we take up the challenges that they offer, they could be more powerful and more relevant than the council, can't they? And that makes you have the opportunity to make art even more relevant to people.
Yeah. It has to be part of the mix. And I think civil society is the civil society organisations in Enfield have been fantastic. And they have for many years, haven't they? The Enfield Society for years and years has been protecting the environment and making sure some awful things didn't happen in Enfield. So civil society has saved Enfield so many times. But we all must, the council is a really important part of that. And actually we should be working to that being an organisation which is working in the best interests of the community. That is its job. And we don't want to turn people against democracy. We want democracy to be working for the benefit of the people.
Yeah, well I did an interview the other day with Claire Maloney from Hinterlands, where she's an old artist on the waterways. And yeah, it is a great organisation. Yeah. And she's also working with another organisation to involve artists and all sorts of other people to look at climate grief, which she calls ecological mourning, that many people are going through at the moment. Yeah. I mean, how do you think, you know, from your position in Labrador Step, your position in NCAF, we can take art as a way of taking the climate change message forward? What do you think we should be doing?
Oh my God, there's a hundred things for us to be doing. We need to make sure that artists are engaging in the conversation, and we need to make sure that the artists, when we're talking about that subject, when we're talking about ecology, we need to be making sure that we're working with artists that believe in it as well, because people will recognize authenticity, and they can see a false voice. So we need to make sure that true voices are being heard. And we also need to make sure that every part of the community has got a voice as well. We must not be leaving people out. And we need to find those voices so that we touch every part of the community.
And how did we do that? Because I'm old enough to remember the 1950s and the angry young men, people who didn't like the middle class theatre and wanted to make it more relevant to working class people. And they developed a sort
little
of...
Budget.
They developed a genre that working class people didn't go and watch. You know, so they did something which wasn't actually successful in terms of the audience they wanted to engage. So how do we reach every part of the community?
That's because that was middle class people putting on a fake working class voice. It needs to be working class people doing it. Working class audiences did go to Joan Littlewood's theatre in Stratford to hear A Taste of Honey. Black audiences flocked to the theatre or Stratford East to see plays written by Black writers, people want to hear an authentic voice. They don't want to hear middle-class people's view on working-class lives. They want to hear working-class people's view on working-class life. And that's where we need to make sure the voice is authentic.
And how can we do that in Enfield? I mean, what sort of process will you go through to try and ensure that that happens?
I go back to what I was saying about my first challenge at Millfield Theatre is to make sure the staff reflect the community. We need to make sure that that our team is reflective of the community, because people won't come in if they think, if we're not talking directly to them and we don't reflect them. So we just need to make sure that we're reflective. That's it. And that's a challenge, especially when you're on a roll and you've got a deadline and you're working to something. You don't take the time to do it. And we just need to just take that time and take the community with us.
Okay, so I mean, do you have steps in which you're planning to do that? Because I think working with Up Your Doorstep, working in NCAP, with NCAP, working the way you do, you have tremendous possibilities. You've got a sort of new world opening to you. What's your first step? What do you think your first step will be now you're in your new reincarnation?
Well, we're talking with lots of people and looking at what they want. Love Your Doorstep has always been an organisation that supports and does partnerships with people. And that is the way forward for us, is to partner with different community groups to realise their work, to promote their voice. Not to promote, we don't want to be talking about Love Your Doorstep. We want to be talking about the work of our partners so that everybody loves their doorstep, so that everybody feels part of their, people feel part of it. One of the things that, you know, really I've been fascinated of, which is one of the issues that you've been working on, is the Edmonton incinerator issue. Because pushing out, trying to get that to be reconsidered. We all worry that are we hearing the voices of Edmonton in that? And we are, because the fantastic Delia Mathis is out there from Edmonton, you know, charging on. But does the whole community understand it? And we know they don't, because we had the amazing Victor Romero Evans come to the Art Slam, and the reason he came was because we were talking to him about the Edmonton incinerator. He's smelt it for years, and he's known about it, but he hasn't realised what the issue is, and he was completely incensed by it. And it made him, you know, it made him vitally come to the Art Slam and let his voice be heard. There's a lot of Edmonton residents who just don't realise, or are used to having to put up with things dumped in their environment because they're the poorest part of the community. We need to take the community, we need to make sure the community understands what's being done.
I mean, talk about the incinerator, and an example of taking art to the communities. We had this wonderful group, the Enfield People's Theatre, who went around from location to location in several hours during the festival, talking about a number of issues, including the incinerator. Is that a good way to, take a message through art to the community and then involve them in that message?
It's a wonderful way to do it, and that play was just absolutely gorgeous because it had an authentic voice. It took me back to a different time, actually, when that sort of agitprop theatre was created. That's where, again, I keep going back to Joan Littlewood like a broken record, but that's where she started. That was the sort of work that she was doing. And all of those people involved in that play, it didn't have any what we would call actors in it. They were people from the community who had a voice and became actors. And there was something so authentic about it. And Afer Orhan is an inspiration. Natural blooming comic timing. Absolutely brilliant.
it's interesting, isn't it, what you say, that, you know, having theatre which is participatory like that. I mean, back, if you go back to Shakespeare's time, it was like that. I mean, people shouted out and they got involved in the production. Somehow in the 19th century, we separated the audience from the performance. Do you think we're going back now to where we were in Shakespearean times, where there's much more interaction in the audience? It's not just an observer, they're part of the theatre.
Absolutely. I mean, it's different. It's different things for different means, isn't it? The agitprop theatre is about changing minds and talking to people directly. As an actor and in the profession, you want to get to a high aesthetic, and there's an audience that wants to enjoy that high aesthetic in the theatre. You need both. But we need that. The theatre for a long time hasn't had that agitprop voice in it. Actually, as increasingly the arts gets further and further away from working class people. I mean, now it's shocking how little the theatre reflects the community. The arts simply reflect the community. It's become out of the reach to so many people, and we've got to. That's something that we all need to do something about.
And clearly, that's one of your missions, is to do something about that. And you're now working with all these social networks and civil society groups, and that's going to be, I think, really successful and exciting for you. So, I mean, we've come to the end of the 30 minutes now, and let me ask you, if anybody wanted to form a partnership with you and whoever you're working with, they wanted to make contact with you and help in any way, how would they do that?
paul@loveyourdoorstep.co.uk.
Well, that was very quick and very simple. So that's that's the way to contact you. Okay, paul@loveyourdoorstep.co.uk. You know, thank you for doing this, because, I mean, I think it's really interesting. I think you've been through the exciting time in Enfield. You've been through a rough time at Enfield, maybe an unfair time as well, of late. But you've now sort of found a new life with other people who share your mission. So I think, you know, you're going to provide a lot of excitement and a lot of content to what happens in Enfield. And we look forward with some hope, some trepidation, some excitement about what's going to happen in the future. And the most important thing, it's probably unpredictable. And that, I think, is always a good thing to have. Serendipity is a great term. And I think you provide that to Enfield and always have. So thank you, Paul, for doing the interview. It's been really, really interesting. And we'll end this interview now.
Bless you.